Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast, where we meet entrepreneurial artists who share our stories as we discuss everything storytelling. I'm Chris Sissons of Market Together.
And I'm Gemma Rosenthal of Creative Hearts. On today's show, we'll explore the arts of information and communications technology and music, the loss of a musical genius.
And this time, we're delighted to introduce our guest, Chris Hodgkiss. He is a highly experienced information technology and telephony consultant, and brings over two decades of experience in his industry. During this time, he has served many different types of businesses, from distribution to recruitment to marketing, to name a few. He prides himself in providing an amazing service to his clients and always believes in going the extra mile to ensure that the service received is second to none. When Chris is not working, he is currently having music lessons where he's learning to play the saxophone. He also attends a church in his hometown on a Sunday and enjoys spending time with family. He is a bit of a foodie and is one definitely to indulge and try new things given the opportunity. So, welcome to Find, Tell, Share, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, nice to be here.
Welcome.
And we've got to start with the saxophone. And I was wondering, who are your inspirations? Who are the saxophonists that spark your interest?
It's got to be Rafferty, hasn't it?
It's
got to be Jerry Rafferty, hasn't it?
Oh, right.
With Baker Street and the rest of it, yeah. I mean, I don't have any particular person I really look up to as such. I just like the instrument. It's just proven to be very complicated to learn. But yeah, I'm enjoying it all the same. That's the main thing.
And
it's something different, isn't it?
And it's the sort of ordinary alto. Is it the alto?
Alto, yeah. Alto sax, yeah. The hardest thing at the moment is actually making time to actually practice between lessons, and that's proven to be quite difficult. I've got a lesson coming up this week, and he gave me some homework to do, and I haven't done it yet. And I know he's going to be telling me off when he sees me.
So
that is no, I was just going to say because I play instruments, but also I used to have lessons on the violin, and that was the hardest thing is practicing in between sessions.
Yeah.
So I can relate to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've only picked up three notes so far. I mean, he showed me like the top half of the saxophone. He hasn't even introduced me to the bottom half yet. I might be holding it, but I'm not pressing anything.
It's a fascinating instrument, and and it's so varied because you've got the soprano sax, which is hasn't got the bend in it.
Right.
Looks a bit like a clarinet, but not quite. And then things like, the bass sax is amazing. It's got a little leg on the bottom because you can't lift it. You've got to prop it up on the floor.
I did actually see something that looked like a double bass in his room, actually, when I was learning. Maybe it was a bass sax, but
I can't remember that. There's a jazz man from the sort of 1930s who used to play it. I can't remember his name now.
It's a good instrument all the same, anyway. I mean, I've got to try and get used to kind of getting my head straight and kind of filling the stomach up with air and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot to learn in this particular instrument, but I'm enjoying it. That's the main thing, and it's something different other than work, isn't it?
What made you want to play it?
Do you know what? I don't know. Honestly, it was like a bit of a spur of the moment thing. I've been watching the band play in church on a Sunday morning. My dad plays the guitar, and I'm thinking they've got an instrument missing. They have on a Sunday, you know. And I wanted to be able to contribute. And when I saw then, what do I do? Which one do I pick? Which one do I choose? And I literally just got eeny, miny, moe. You know, I got out my trusty post-it notes here and put the different instruments on there.
Oh my
gosh. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And then the saxophone came up. It's like, okay, yeah, that'll do. Went online and see if I could hire one, and hired the instrument and found an instructor. So it was very much done on a whim, really.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a Methodist local preacher, and I remember once the steward contacted me to say, we haven't got an organist this week, but we found a saxophonist. And I thought, right. And can it be played on the saxophone? That should test them to destruction. And he was brilliant. He just played it all the way through with fantastic breathing. So there's something to aspire to.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was rather hoping we would find a segue from music into IT and ICT, but I'm struggling a bit.
I've served one or two musicians, so people who work in music and Mac lovers, so to speak, over the time. So there's definitely a connection there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you serve musicians?
How do I help them?
Yeah.
One source in the kit to do their work, so help them to find equipment, so finding a new Mac or maybe one that's good to do the work with, or even a Windows device. More recently, I did a repair for a musician that managed to drop his Mac midway through production. He got it on the music stand as he's on his stand and literally just fell off and smashed the screen and goodness knows what else. And,
oh, don't. That's a nightmare. I need to back up all my stuff. Everything's on the Mac.
Yeah, well, his data was absolutely fine, but the Mac screen wasn't. But for him, he went back to the Apple shop initially. They quoted him £420, I think it was, for a new screen. And I said, I can do that same repair for £350. So yeah, that wasn't a bad little saving, was it? For a student, it was all right. So yeah, I mean, I've also done some work for people who work in production as well, also around the actual kind of behind the scenes type people who do all the audio and the sound and such like. Again, they're like lots of nice screens and bits and pieces to work from. So yeah, it's actually quite interesting. I've even worked with some retired people in that space. The one guy actually was quite proud to be the sound man that got the sound to your TV for Roland Rat when he was on TV many years ago. So all sorts of crazy walks of life. I've got a retired sound engineer who worked for the Beeb and ITV. I look after him. He's recently had a new laptop. He now does a bit of music production. He more actually creates the music for people to actually sing from or play from. So he's a songwriter, is he? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I've helped him again. Similar kind of situation, really. Hard drive ready to die. Old piece of software that he didn't necessarily want to upgrade. So I literally just salvaged it before it got too bad. And I was able to kind of clone his disk and get everything working as it was before the pain happened. So, yes, he's paid me, but he's only paid once. So I have to pay a subscription as the software's gone. So, yeah, it's quite interesting, really, how I've helped people in that space. I think it just seems all came together in one go. It's like it all came in a cluster.
So I'm a producer as well, a music producer, singer, songwriter. And so, yeah, I'm in the process of doing songs, putting them together, recording them. I was just talking to Chris about how I did a live stream the other day. So we figured out the company knows how to put the audio through so that you hear it on a live stream, but so that it goes through Logic, which is my door that I use, which is like a music program.
I know, yeah.
It's been a really interesting journey for me, because I never imagined when I was training to be a performer that I would end up doing music production, because I always thought somebody else would sort that part out. But then when I just found myself doing more and more of it, because relying on other people sometimes can be a challenge if they have other ideas, or, you know, the cost of it as well. So it's much more cost effective to be able to do it by yourself. And also it helps you to have creative controls, because you can choose. So for example, if I get an idea, I can just go and record it. I don't have to necessarily book a studio, although it is really nice working with other musicians and working in studios. I really enjoy that. So I do sometimes do that as well, but it's handy to have the setup at home as well.
I just look at the desk in a music studio and just go, oh my goodness. I mean, I had to do the sound once for one of the churches that we used to attend. It was a very small desk. It only had about like 8 channels on it or something like that coming into it. But I soon learned how it was all kind of in rows and there was different, you know, from left to right and whatnot. But it was immensely, you know, highly technical initially. And the guy that actually ran the church, the pastor of the church, he was really particular about how everything had to be just right. Mm-hmm. You know, if the knob wasn't quite in the right place on the desk, he was very quick to come in and make an adjustment. Or if it was a bit of vibration or there was a bit of distortion, he used to just literally just run off the stage up the stairs into the sound desk and just do what he had to do if I wasn't quick enough to adjust it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of know a little bit about that space, but... I don't know whether I could really kind of study it. It would just go right over my head, to be honest. So I think it's an art in itself, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I've got a bit of sympathy for you. with your backups, yeah. I mean, if you talked about, you know, your Mac's your life and everything's on it, you've got to keep it.
Well, I did buy a backup, but I don't know how to use it. So I don't know if you know anything about backups. But well, I think I have to register it.
Briefly, because your listeners would appreciate probably wanting to know as well.
Yeah, I do.
So the best way to back up, is it a Mac you're working from, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Logic. So yeah. The best way to back up any Mac is with Time Machine. It's already built into the Mac already.
Time Machine.
Yeah, Time Machine's an app that's already on the operating system already.
Okay.
So it goes into the USB port. Time Machine detects it. And what it will do is it will take a snapshot of your computer at that moment in time. So all the applications, as they are, just much better than Windows. It literally takes a full image of the operating system, everything as it is right now in its setup, and then you just frequently just let it just, as it goes along, just take new snapshots. The idea being that you can just go back into a point in time quite quickly. You need to, hence why it's called Time Machine. So if you wanted to go back a week and think, I want to see last week's data, you can hit back a week and say, right, restore my computer to that particular point and that particular time quite quickly. So that's the way to do it. Obviously, you've got quite large files with music and video and such like, so you need to make sure that you've got a drive that's of ample size to match the computer. You know, there's no good having a 500 gigabyte external hard drive when you've got a 1 terabyte drive that's got 750 gig of data on it, right? So they need to be of equal capacity. And it's also a good idea to rotate drives as well. You don't want to be in a position where you're just relying on one drive to do all the work. So have a week's worth of backups on one drive and then maybe swap them over every now and again as well, so that you're not putting everything all on one drive and knowing that if that drive fails, you've lost everything, right? So you need to have like a bit of redundancy there as well.
Okay, so I still that still goes completely over my head, even though I have heard of Time Machine, as in I have been using that. It's like I bought the backup, which I'm not sure where that is, you know, the drive, yeah. And then I saw this Time Machine thing that kept doing what you were saying it was doing. But then from that point, I was thinking, well, I don't know where the files are actually on the drive, but no. We can talk about this another time, yeah, because I don't want to go into it too much on here not. Because it's about your story.
Have a separate call with me sometime and we'll thrash it out properly, no problem. I'm a Mac user myself, so I know my way around it quite well.
Okay, great, thank you for that. Yeah, it's just all these technical things that sometimes just get us all confused, and then we don't kind of do it because it seems too confusing. I mean, I'm speaking from my point of view, but some people I know.
Yeah, but you're the same, just like everybody else. That's why we do what we do, right? You know, we've got to respect the fact we've all got our skill set and we're all good at different things. You know, we're all given different gifts, and the gift I was given was with technology.
Yeah,
Chris was obviously whatever he does, I can never remember.
Storytelling.
There you go.
And helping others with their stories.
That's right.
And also community stuff. You've done community projects, haven't you, Chris? So.
Yeah, but you've just got to know what's, you know, what you're good at and play to your strengths. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, mine is songwriting or just writing in general, performing, creativity basically, and also supporting other people with their creativity and connections as well.
Nice.
So yeah, I've always loved the creative side of it, but the technology is just something I have to learn and get help with.
It's a tool for your job at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. But I definitely know a lot more than I used to, and you know, getting around it and starting once you know how to use a certain tool like a technology program, application or whatever it is, it can be really fun because you can create with it. It's like once we know how to use this platform, we can now create a podcast. Mm. And once you know how to put it on the other platforms, you can put it out there. So once you get a handle of a certain way of doing it, then you can actually create some really cool stuff.
I was with a lady yesterday. She was 73 or 74, but early 70s. And she'd obviously retired from her work, but she got into photography, more so amateur photography, really. And, you know, you want to see her whiz around Photoshop. And you just look at it and think, oh, I'd love to have that skill set. she absolutely flies around the screen. It's for me, it's completely alien. I can install it for you, no problem at all, and get it on your computer and get it activated, but I would have a clue how to use it. But she's been using it since she's retired, and she says, I'm not looking forward to this AI stuff now that they're bringing onto it. And I said, I want to do it myself. I don't want the artificial intelligence to do the work for me. I enjoy doing what I do, you know. So yeah, it's quite interesting.
But can you explain exactly what your area of expertise is then? Information communications, technology, and music is what's written here, but can you explain what that means?
The music side isn't necessarily a necessary speciality, it's more of an interest. Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, I love my music, you know, in any way, shape or form, and I'll listen to absolutely any type of music depending on what mood I'm in. But in terms of what I do, I guess you could class me as an outsourced IT manager for small businesses. So rather than paying somebody full time to manage your IT, right, just pay me a retainer to look after it instead. I take away pain and discomfort and stress from people trying to fathom stuff out themselves. A lot of people spend a lot of time trying to do that when I may have a quick answer and a quick solution to it. So the typical person this is no word of a joke, will happily spend two and a half hours trying to fix something themselves before they'll ring me. And then I'll then remote on and do what I've got to do. Within 20 minutes, it's fixed. And they're like, oh, I should have just called you in the first place. Or, you know, because I've seen things so many times in my years I've been in this work now, which is nearly 22 years, you get to know what the fix is for it. You get to know that you don't need to do that to fix that. You can just do that. It's not worth even trying and do that in the first place. So yeah, my experience really goes a hell of a long way with what I do. I like to look at the way people work as well and identify pain points that could present a bigger problem later on. So I like to audit people's systems and processes. I'm quite happy to walk into a business and kind of pick the holes out, I think is about the best way to describe it, and then kind of find ways to kind of fill them with good. Or identify smarter ways of working or smarter ways of doing things that would make the process quicker or faster or maybe more efficient, however you want to describe it. So yeah, it just depends on what I'm going on. But I also provide all the day-to-day services that people work with as well. So as a Microsoft partner, I get involved with Microsoft 365 and all of the total tool, you know, the tools that sit around that for backing it up and keeping it protected and keeping it secure. So yeah, so I'm a bit of a, what's known in the industry as a managed service provider, but at the same time, I'm a bit of an all-rounder. You know, I can dabble in a lot of different spaces. I've got a lot of experience in a lot of different areas, so I can be pulled in many different ways. More recently, got involved with connectivity. So people are going to the big boys for their broadband and whatever else. And more recently, I've got involved with now providing the service directly to my customers, knowing that I can support it internally. You mentioned earlier about the fact that you want to be able to do your own bit with the music and take control of how things happen. It's the same for me from an IT perspective. The more I can do myself and the more I've got a little bit of control of, the greater service I can give. So I don't know, let's use yourself as an example. You know, broadband suddenly stops working. Do you want to spend an hour on the phone to BT, or do you want to send me a WhatsApp and just say, Chris, we've got a problem with the broadband? It's a different experience, isn't it? And that indeed, again, saves time, right? Time's money. And you'll obviously know who you're talking to. I'll know the business better. I'll understand the setup. And I'll know that it may not be a broadband problem. It could be something else. Whereas the likes of OpenReach or BT will just look at their side, won't they? Whereas I can look at the whole infrastructure. It's a whole different experience.
Yes, I think that's really important because people and technology are actually a single system. And the way people relate to technology changes and evolves over time. I mean, a good example of that is email. At one time, email was the thing that everybody used, and you knew how to put together the hook, the story, and the call to action to do this beautiful email that everybody would open. Well, not everybody, but large numbers would open. And most of that doesn't really work now, if you think of the way you delete most of the emails you receive without even looking at the subject line. It's because people's relationship with that particular technology has changed. And that's true across the board. We're evolving new ways of using it.
Yeah, I put security systems in place on people's email, and one of the options is actually to block info mail. So they'll never see a newsletter in their email box anyway. They'll just see what they need to see. Mm-hmm. And a lot, if I asked all of my customers whether they want to opt in or opt out and be ticking that box, every single one would say, tick it. I don't want to see it.
Mm. Yes.
And even though sometimes these people are doing email marketing themselves.
Absolutely.
They don't want it in their inbox. Yeah.
But then the flip side of that is that sometimes I have seen an email at random and it's selling something and I've bought it.
Mm.
So sometimes you do look at it and you end up purchasing.
Yeah, they're very clever though, these email marketing campaigns. If they've seen something you've bought before, then they're bound to send you something that you're bound to like. Yeah. You only need to actually go and look on a web page without even buying it, and you'll get an email in your inbox with a special offer on it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's once you've already bought into it, then you read the emails.
Mm.
So it's got to be something that you've already been interested in
I was talking to a printing company today, and he told me that they use email marketing as a way to keep in touch with their customers every month. And I said, that's great. And he said, well, I said, what do you send them? Can I have a look at it? And he said, it's too generic. I said, you need to tailor the message a little bit. You need to be a bit more specific about what you're saying. So make them a bit more personalized. Have a look at what they've bought in the past. What's going to complement what they've had before? So, you know, if they've bought, for example, hoodies in the past, do they want T-shirts for the summer? Don't send them a special offer with flyers on it. It's got to be something that's got to be relevant to what's going on in their head at the time.
Yeah, definitely.
Gemma, I understand you are mourning the passing of a great musician. Would you like to tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, I'd say there's quite a lot of people probably mourning her who maybe even know more of her music than I do. So I don't want to claim that it's particularly my own, you know, mourning. But I will say that I did cry some tears because I was rehearsing the other day. So I chose one of her songs, a very legendary song as well. And this song was something that we used to have play in assembly. So I wrote in a blog, one of my blogs, about the fact that I bumped into my head teacher that I had at school. And he always used to play Simply the Best. And as you've probably guessed, if you do know the song, that was by Tina Turner, who recently just passed. And I decided to do a tribute to her by learning the song. And I'd actually stayed up. The idea only came to me on the day of the gig. So it was in the morning because she'd passed away the night before. And I was doing the live stream gig, which I mentioned earlier, at Ursa Live. I might be doing some more as well. So if I have any dates booked in, I'll put them in the show links. So I'd spent all evening wide awake, looking at Tina Turner videos, but I wasn't listening to her songs that are the most well-known songs. This was in the evening before. I was actually looking at her spiritual music because she was a Buddhist. And in her later years, she actually wrote a lot of meditation songs. So this was something that really interested me, and I just listened to it and I just thought, wow, this music is so transcendent and beautiful, and it just inspired me so much. And then in the morning, I hadn't slept at all. I just was still awake. But I thought, right, I want to learn one of her songs. Which one do I know to sing? Because I couldn't really sing the meditation songs because they're more chanting or kind of that kind of music. So I knew that I wanted to do one of her more popular songs. And so I chose Simply the Best because it was the one that I thought I knew the most, even though I didn't know it particularly, but I knew it. It was in my voice, as in when I started singing, I thought, yeah, yes, I know this, so I can do it. And yeah, so that was really it started me to think that about storytelling in relation to Tina's journey and her life and how she managed to overcome things. Her story would, what type of story would it be? Would it be the, because you know the types of story that you talk about, this Chris Sissons, you talk about the different types of story. Do you know what type of story it is? Just have a think on that in it, or you can mention it now if you know. Is it overcoming? Do you know what I mean?
I think I need to know a bit more about the story.
Oh, you need to know a bit more about the story, and then you can mention. So basically, I watched her documentary today, Tina, and there's also been a film which I've not watched yet because I don't know if I want to, because I know she doesn't think it's that truthful. So, but I know that the acting is good in it, so I might take a look at it just for the basis of the actors. But she mentions that she doesn't really like watching or reading or thinking about her story because it's about abuse, basically. So she was famous with Ike Turner, who they were a duo back in the day, and this is how she became famous. But then when she finally got the courage, he used to beat her, but then when she finally got the courage to leave him and leave the relationship, she didn't have any money. He took all the money. And then she didn't really know what to do, but she knew she wanted to continue with her career. So she would just play different shows and trying to get her name out there. And then she got a manager. And the part of the journey, and this is why I'm mentioning it on the Storytellers podcast, is that she wasn't really getting that known, and nobody was wanting to sign her because she was older. I think she was in her 40s. So they thought, you know, it's normally over for pop stars around that age. But she didn't give up and she didn't give in. And what she did do was she told her story in People magazine, was the first thing she did. And she said, you know, I don't want to talk about this. This is something that she wanted to put in the past. She kept, in many different interviews, she'd say, I just want to leave this in the past. It's happened. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. It's obviously very traumatic. But the thing is once she told her story, she got started to, well, she got a number one, was What's Love Got to Do with It? That came after, I think after she'd already told her story. And also she started to get letters pouring in after she'd written a book as well about it, and just started to get more and more popular because people related to this story and her journey. And I suppose it's just that overcoming arc that people resonated with, and the fact that she escaped this life and then moved forward into a more successful, freedom, basically. And she did this using Buddhism, using the chanting. That's what helped her get the courage to leave. She was always quite spiritual anyway, because she came from a Christian background, so she still prayed, used prayer as well as the meditation as part of her practice. But I suppose what interests me is the dichotomy of, yes, she wanted to tell her story and it helped her become famous to the level that she was, but then at the same time, her story was also something that haunted her and that held her back in a way of, because every time she did an interview, she was asked about it. And I know Chris always talks about the fact that we're not just one story. We've got many stories. And luckily, she found the love of her life, and she, who actually gave her a kidney as well, when she, because she had lots of health problems at the end of her life. But at least she got to live out a happier story at the end of it. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that, just a little bit I've shared. Obviously, she tells it more fully in the documentary, and I've also read her book as well. But yeah, if you've got any thoughts on that in terms of, you know, the benefits of telling our story when it comes to our business, but yet also, I guess, the kind of downfalls of it in terms of everybody knowing all your deepest like traumas, and if you choose to tell that type of story is what I'm saying, and what your thoughts. I mean, I don't think she really had a choice, particularly because people were asking her about Ike, and she wanted to sort of set the record straight of like, no, this wasn't a fairy tale, because that's the original story was sort of like, oh, they were great together and, you know, it was all happy. And I suppose she had to sort of say, look, this is what happened. But once she did that, then that became the storyline. And it's just fascinating how people will take these dramatic stories and kind of run with it in a way and make it their own, and how that affects the person who's going through it.
Yes, you asked me which story type, and I mean, stories don't always conform just to one type. It varies, and clearly there's elements of overcoming the monster in the story. Mm-hmm. But I wonder as well whether there's an element of rags to riches, because a typical rags to riches story, there's an initial success, and usually that initial success is because they're dependent on a mentor or a supporter of some description. And maybe that was the relationship that she initially had with Ike Turner. And then for some reason they lose that mentor, and the things go downhill. But when they recover under their own steam and become more fully, well, I suppose, themselves. I think there's probably an element of that in her story. Just a couple of things that you may or may not find interesting. I heard one of the obituaries for Tina Turner. Apparently, she always described herself as a Baptist Buddhist, and if I can remember correctly, the reason she did that was that she said that her childhood experience in the Baptist church was actually foundational, and she never forgot it. It brought her into music, and the Buddhism came later in life, and she felt there was a connection between the two, I suppose. And the other thing, I only discovered this afternoon, Ike and Tina Turner performed in Sheffield at the end of my street, virtually. Peter Stringfellow, I live in part of Sheffield called Pitsmoor, and Peter Stringfellow was brought up is a famous impresario, and he had loads of nightclubs all over Sheffield and eventually all over the world. But while he was in Sheffield, this would have been in the 60s and 70s, he opened a club called the King Mojo, which apparently was at number 555 Pitsmoor Road, which I'm going to go and try and find it. But Ike and Tina Turner performed there, which is pretty amazing. I think the club was closed because it was making too much noise and the neighbours complained to the council and the council shut them down.
Yeah.
But that's where it was. So there is that.
What year would that have been?
I'm not quite sure. I think it must have been late 60s, early 70s, around about that sort of time.
Mm-hmm.
So no, Tina Turner, Chris. I mean, I'm not terribly familiar with her music.
I don't know her personally, Chris. But
no, her work, her oeuvre, as they say.
We saw her on we saw the stage show in London for Tina Turner, wow, the musical. That was good. When that was around, it's a brilliant show that was. And in fact, you know, it sent goose pimples all over you. It's about the best way to describe it. But yeah, that was obviously telling the story of her life as well. It was quite an eye opener. But don't you think a lot of these people, like these people who've kind of in fact gone to like stardom and celebrity type people, they've all gone through some kind of experience somewhere to get them to where they are. You know, they've always got some kind of story to tell somewhere, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always something there that's kind of got them to where they are, that's driven them to another level.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It tends to work out that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's always something,
highs and lows.
Something that's kind of triggered it.
Yeah.
No, I hadn't realised that Tina Turner sort of based her act around a life story. That
I don't think she did as much. Not her act as such, but I suppose just what I was pointing out is that was when she became, I suppose, her arc. That was the moment, what they said in this documentary anyway, was that the moment she had her second, what do they call it?
Well,
come back.
Yes.
Not that she ever went away. She didn't go away. She just wasn't as famous
for a bit
at that middle part. But the moment she started to get more known again was through the telling of her story, which is what interests me because it shows how important storytelling is to that. Having people gravitate towards what you're doing or your work because they relate to something about the person, and often that is through the storytelling, because whether people realize it or not, there's often that we're always making meaning, aren't we? And even if you don't know the story, maybe you've just heard one of the songs, the story is embedded in the songs anyway, because even if she's not telling the story specifically in a song, it's there, you know, the pain, the overcoming, the power, the strength, the determination, the gutsiness, it's all there.
I've actually found that club that you were talking about, Chris. In Pitsmoor Road, it was called the King Mojo Club. On 555 Pitsmoor Road, it operated between 1964 and 1967. Yeah, there you go. But so there's lots of pictures on Google of events and bits and pieces there and such like, and pictures as it was before it got taken away. Yeah, if you look in the Sheffield Music Archive.co.uk, you'll see. Yeah.
Okay, what's it called?
The King Mojo Club.
King Mojo.
So just put into Google King Mojo Club Sheffield. Mm-hmm. You'll find lots of interesting pictures and tickets and whatnot on there.
So, Chris, you're going to be talking about Aladdin.
Possibly. Well, a bit.
Maybe. I mean, sorry, a genie.
What this is about is the only topic of conversation in the news these days is artificial intelligence. And I've started to read around it. And what it soon occurred to me that AI could equally stand for alternative intelligence. And that's important because human beings have wrestled with alternative to human intelligence over millennia. And it's there in our folklore, in mythology, in all the, you know, the stories that we tell. And so I've started to draft a series of blog posts, which I haven't published yet because I still need to do a bit more work on them, but to try and explore how humanity has dealt with alternative alien type, alien to humanity type intelligences. And obviously it's more about human beings than it is about AI, but it is also about AI because part of it is there's all this talk about how dangerous it's going to be. I think it was in the news this morning that AI in a couple of years could be inventing biological or chemical weapons and wipe out the whole of humanity. Is this a justifiable fear, or is it something that's just coming out of the sorts of stories that we're telling? I asked Gemma, I read out a few of the headings that I had, and Gemma chose Aladdin because she'd heard of it. And I should say, I'm going to read you the post as it's written. I should say, just to explain one thing, and that is there's a character in the post called Minerva. And Minerva is a fictional character who stands in for ChatGPT, because I decided that it was very difficult to have any sort of relationship with something called ChatGPT. So I decided to call it Minerva, who is the goddess of wisdom, warfare, education, and something else that I've forgotten. But she seems to be in a... Oh, trade and business. How could I forget that? So she seems to be a very appropriate goddess to associate with artificial intelligence. So we're all familiar with the story of Aladdin, even if only from pantomimes. Whilst it is a great story, it's unfortunate that we tend to get the impression that genies live in lamps. Even in the same story, there's a second genie that lives in a ring. But genies, or jinn, are much more varied. Minerva tells me, in Islamic tradition, jinn are said to be made of smokeless flame and are considered to be sentient beings with free will similar to humans. Jinn are known for their shape-shifting abilities and can appear as animals or humans. They are also believed to have the power to possess humans, causing them to act in unusual ways. In Middle Eastern folklore, jinn are often associated with mischief and trickery and are known to play pranks on humans. So here's a rich vein of stories about how to deal with alternative intelligences. Think about the parallels with artificial intelligence. AI is powered by electricity, arguably smokeless flame. Some believe AI is or soon will be sentient. Let's leave the meaning of sentient fluid for now. Where AI has a form, it is manufactured by humans and can be any shape. Whilst they are not shape-shifting, the same AI can occupy more than one body or machine or whatever. There is talk of AI being grafted into human bodies with a direct effect on the brain. AI is said to hallucinate. I'm not quite sure what that means, but it's said to hallucinate, ask what it is, and make up information. Some of the things said about AI make little sense in the cold light of common sense, but okay, there's potential to play tricks on humans. Minerva adds, however, djinn are not necessarily evil or malevolent. In fact, they are believed to be able to grant wishes to humans who are able to capture them or gain their favour. The idea of djinn granting wishes is the basis of many popular Western depictions of genies, such as in the story of Aladdin and the Lamp. So that's the end of Minerva's bit. Whilst the origins of Aladdin are most likely Western, it does illustrate one of the concerns I have about AI. Everything goes well for Aladdin until his evil uncle steals the lamp and binds the genie to himself. The genie is formed by its owner. We see here a genie without free will that executes the will of its owner. When we consider the possibility of benevolent AI, we must equally consider the possibility that it may be corrupted by those less concerned with human welfare. Imagine a Trumpian AI.
It's very interesting that you've made that comparison between AI and genies, and how it's about being in the hands of the right, what you do with it, basically. So making sure it's in the right hands. Fascinating.
Certainly the next big thing at the minute in our industry, anyway. Yeah.
So are you working with AI, apart from the obvious ChatGPT?
Not yet, no. I'm leaving it to the AI experts, shall we say. It goes back to what I said earlier. Play to your strengths. Know what you're good at. Know where you can add most value. And artificial intelligence is a law to its own. If you know it and you understand it, carry on. You know, do what you got to do. But I'd much rather just focus on what I can do that will make me some money and know what I can do to give people the best support I can. Mm-hmm. There is definitely room for it. It's certainly going to make a big difference to people. I can see how it's going to help them. But it's just not something really I've got time to get my head around. So I'd have to specialise in it, and I'd rather stick to what I can do.
And how about you, Gemma? Are you going to get an AI support for your songwriting?
No. It's probably the answer to that. I'll never say never, because you don't know what creativity you might be able to have with different. I did try some AI pictures, but then I found out that they're not good for artists, because so apparently they take different artists' works and then create something and they don't pay the artist to do that. So I decided that, okay, maybe this is not such a good idea. But people did like the AI pictures, even though they didn't really look like me, to be honest. Some of them did, but I think they were fun, because you get to live in sort of a fantasy world when you use AI, because it can create whatever. But it does, I don't know, it does lack humanity, I guess, because it's not human. So I prefer art done by humans, but I guess AI is art done by humans, because they're using art done by humans to create something. So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm not completely opposed to AI, but it's not something... I'm more interested in human creativity, and how we can use things like AI or whatever, to improve our connection to each other and also our connection to the planet and I suppose more enlightened ways of being. So that will be my take on it. If it's not going to be helpful, then I wouldn't want to use it. But if it's going to help people become more aligned with, I guess, higher ways of being or just more kinder ways of being, then yes. That's my thoughts. Where can we find you, Chris? This Chris. I'm pointing to the screen. but you can't see.
Yes, well, we don't know which one of us you're pointing at when you do.
I know. I said this was happening.
Yeah.
So Chris Hodgkiss, am I saying your name correctly?
Of course you are, yeah.
Yeah. How can we find you if people want to work with you? What do they need to do?
You can go to the address bar and type in it-madesimple.uk. You can find me on Google under IT Made Simple quite easily. You'll find me on LinkedIn. You'll find me on Facebook and all the usual different places. So just have a little rummage around the internet for IT Made Simple and you will find me somewhere. It is quite prominent in the Google pages. So, yeah, have a look on there. And all my contact details, telephone number, address, it's all there on the web.
Great. And Chris?
As per usual, nothing's changed since the last time. But I believe, Gemma, you've got a new, I can't remember what you call it, a new page, live.
Oh, Ursa Live.
Yes.
Where you can watch me do lives, yes. I haven't got the next date yet, but when that is there, we can put it in the show notes. And you can follow my pages, Gemma Rosenthal, at Gemma Rosenthal on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all Spotify, Amazon Music. Basically, I have music out and I also am a coach, a creative life coach. So if you would like to find your voice and live a more creative life, then I do one-on-ones and group workshops. And again, once I have more dates for that, I'll put that on all the show notes. And yeah, you can find me at creativehearts.coach. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And make sure that you go and check out all our other podcasts. We're now on episode 33, I think.
Yes, that's this episode. And thank you very much, Chris. I think there's some really good value in what we've talked about today, because the technology that we use is absolutely crucial to success as creatives, as in other sorts of businesses. So thank you, Chris. Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for having me.